Hi, Head and Heart Workers. Sierra here. Obviously, you can probably tell that I have lost my voice. It's actually day 4 of my voice being MIA. This is the best I've sounded. So in light of this, we're going to take a sick day today for the first time in JBU history in the last 5.5 years. And we're going to air one of the Patreon episodes that we put out earlier this year. It's a great episode, and it gives you an opportunity to get an idea of what our Patreon episodes look like, feel like. We often check in and answer a question just like we do on our primary episodes. If you want more of this exclusive content, you can go to patreon.com/justbreakuppod. But in the meantime, enjoy this episode. It's a good one. I promise. I love it. I picked it out myself with the help of some of our patrons, and I will go back on vocal rest. Welcome to Just Break Up, the Patreon edition. My name is Sierra DeMolder.
And I'm Sam Blackwell. And this week, we're going to be answering a letter about grief in relationships.
Yes. But first, we're going to check in about something that an epiphany I had earlier this week.
You know, so many epiphanies in your life.
Yeah, they're awful. They're haunting me. You know what I was saying the other day is that, like, one day in the future, I was talking to Willow about, like, way future planning and, like, you know, one day this podcast, spoiler alert, this podcast won't exist forever, you know?
Sure.
And I was saying, like, man, when it's over, I'll miss it. But more importantly, like, there is a well-worn path in my brain now. When I have an epiphany or a thought or a life experience, I often immediately think, oh, this would be great to talk about on the podcast, or I'll share this on the podcast, or I'll unpack this on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for years after we're done with this show, that will be my path in my brain. So for I will sure. think of you all for years when this is over in the future.
When we retire, whenever that is.
Yeah. So, okay, a little bit of backstory. I was putting my daughter to sleep a couple nights ago, and randomly earlier that day, I had thought about, you know, the first couple weeks that she was born, and how my mother was staying with us to help us adjust, and how she said during that time that I was a natural. She said, oh, you're a natural at being a mother. And it made me like sing. It made me like glow. Every cell in my body was like, oh my God, my mother is complimenting me genuinely. And I was not only really touched by it as a new mom, having my mother like echo back that affirmation to me, but the fact that it was my mom who is not particularly affirming or vocal in her love, and how I grew up really wanting that all the time. Everything about it made me feel great. And to this day, I think of that and cherish that memory. And so that was like kind of in the back of my mind. And as Sam alluded to earlier, joked about, I'm just processing a lot in my life these days, going through a little bit of postpartum anxiety and still adjusting to parenthood, and just fucking one of those seasons where you're like, there's so many new pathways in my brain. So as I was putting my daughter to sleep, I was thinking about that time in my mother, that my mother said that, and like how good it made me feel, and how if she said things to me like that all the time, how full and light and glowing I would feel all the time. Mm. Like if my mom regularly said, oh, I think you're such a great podcast host, or wow, you're such a great partner, or you're such a great daughter, I'm so proud of you. You know, like if she said those things to me more often, how, like, I don't even know, I would like glitch. I'd be like overwhelmed with love, you know, or like good feelings. And so I'm like patting my daughter's back, thinking about this in the dark, you know, and all of a sudden I had the most simple epiphany, because I was imagining what it would feel like to routinely hear those things from my mom. And then my epiphany was, Well, you could just like pretend to be your mom. You could just like, what would it feel? I almost gamified it in my mind. Like, what would it be like if for, I don't know, not forever, not even for a month, but for like a week, you talk to yourself the way your mother would in this fantasy, like mm-hmm. this made up mom, you mm-hmm. know, where that mom always says what you want to hear, you know? And so if it's a game, I know this is very simple, but I'm just trying to explain my weird thought pattern, you know, at 7 o'clock at night when I'm putting the baby to bed. Uh-huh. Like, you know, for a week, what if I said to myself, oh, I'm a really good podcast host. I'm a really good daughter. I'm a great daughter. I'm so proud of myself, you know, and the reason why I wanted to share it, even though it's so simple, you know, like, of course we want to be spoken to with love, you know, like the love we crave. Mm-hmm. The reason why I wanted to share it is like, it created an equation for my brain to fill in this blank. Like, I struggle so hard to feel a sense of ownership or authenticity when it comes to kind words to myself. Like, they always feel fake. Like, I can give them to other people, but when I trying to say, oh, I'm proud of myself, about myself, it feels very unnatural. But if I gamify it, if I pretend I'm being a character, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. It gives me a script. It gives my brain a way to relax, to be like, oh, no, you don't have to hate yourself. You're just pretending to be your mother, you fucking weirdo. but for some reason, that like makes sense to me. Like, okay, instead of like negative self-talk, I'm going to pretend to be my imaginary mother who would affirm me. That sounds so fucking batshit, but it just makes sense to me. And it makes accessing that script of love somehow and for some reason easier. So that's what I'm trying to do this week, friends. And I'm not trying to do it forever. I'm not trying to do it for a month. I'm trying to do something really attainable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm just trying to rewire that pathway in my brain that always goes to negative self-talk, and instead practicing going somewhere else. And hopefully after a week, that practice will feel a little bit more familiar. That path will start getting more well-worn. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, hopefully I'm not going to have to pretend to be my imaginary mother to be nice to myself.
Sure.
But if that's what you have to do, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. I think it's just another opportunity for new perspective.
Yeah. I mean, we have to find it in whatever way works for us too.
Right.
Right. Like, there are some people who I'm sure have other ways of doing it. And like, yours is like, okay, I'm just going to pretend to be the mom I never had. I'm just going to say nice things to myself. Yeah, absolutely. Like it, but it's about like disrupting those.
I think, yeah, like,
it's like stepping off like the rut or the track that you're on, yes. And just being like, yeah. Even if it's just like shoving you off the track in some way, yeah. Just to be like, go in the woods. Like, yeah, it's better, yeah, yeah. In there.
And I know that like on the show and in my life, I've often said like, speak to yourself like you're a child or nurture your inner child, yada, yada, yada. And that like makes sense to me, but I couldn't ever feel it. The difference was I had just been thinking about the literal glow I felt when my mother made me feel good. You know, mm-hmm. like I was literally I was picturing that embodied joy that I felt when I was fully affirmed by her in that moment. And then I'm like, okay, well, what would make me feel that way? Or if my mom made me feel like that all the time, what would that be like? And then all of a sudden I kind of have that blueprint for that feeling. It's not just like, oh, you're okay, little Sierra. That doesn't mean anything, you know?
Yep.
Instead being like, what would make my body sing with praise and affirmation? That what would my mother say that would make me feel that way again? Say it to myself now. Pretend that I'm my mother, you know. Mm-hmm. Again, sounds a little weird, but it opened a doorway in my head somewhere to be like, it can be like this.
Yeah. I mean, I've had therapists who have walked me through something very similar, where it's like, this thing happened, and then you're like, oh, this, my parent didn't respond in the way that I wanted to. And then it's like, well, what would you have wanted them to say? And then like, can you say that to yourself? And it's like,
yeah,
oh, I could, but I wouldn't believe it because it's from me. And I'm like a skewed narrator. And it's like, so are my parents. Like they are not yes, reliable people.
Exactly. That's why I pretend to be my own imaginary mother.
Which apparently
totally 100% sane.
But again, it's not like, it's not like, it's not even about like how it's happening. It is just the act of disruption, the act of like that narrative of like, my thing is like when I'm lying in bed in the morning and like beating myself up for no reason and then being like, okay, well, you can't do this anymore. You instead have to like say all the things you're grateful for. And is it like, does that gratitude practice like fill me up and like do things? No, but it like disrupts. It is now the like trigger for me to like stop the negative self-talk and go think about something else. And like, that's the thing I found that works like 50% of the time, but like it doesn't, whatever is the thing that helps you to get off of that, that path is really the thing that you need to be doing. So if it's pretending you're your mom and giving yourself compliments, like I'm on board with it. Like if you believe your imaginary mom more than you believe yourself, like
it sounds so unhinged, but the one thing I will say to anybody who is like, maybe this will work for me, you know, think about what it feels like to be fully and wholly affirmed, or like think about what it feels like the last time you got a compliment or a, you know, seen or affirmed in a way that made you feel really good. And then be like, well, what would it feel like? What would I need to hear to feel like that all the time? Or what would I need to tell myself? Who would I need to hear it from? And then, I don't know, pretend to be them.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I like it. Yeah. It's like, you know, I think through the process of doing all of this self-work, I have intentionally changed some of these thought patterns, right? And like tried to be like, okay, you're being really negative. Like, let's do something to like compliment yourself or whatever. And then I wouldn't believe it, right? And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, I keep doing this practice and I keep not believing myself. So what would it look like if I actually chose to believe myself when I was saying these things rather than just saying them out of rote?
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I just have the choice to do that. Interesting. Okay. Like I thought it was like so unavailable to me. And then I was like, oh, actually I get to choose what I believe about myself.
Like, yeah. It's just wild.
It's just like, oh, it was this easy the whole time. Did not feel easy, to be clear. Like no. It was like not easy.
None
and still
easy.
Sometimes it's like not often easy, but like, it was such a profound shift for me when I realized that all I had to do was start believing the nice things I was saying about myself. And I was like, oh, is that it? Is that really, it's really the thing I've been resisting for the last 34 years of my life?
Yeah. And I just have to pretend to be someone else. Okay, good. Pretend to be someone else who's complimenting me.
Yes. Because their compliments matter more.
Okay.
We're all on a journey. We're all on a journey.
Yeah. And I'm on a journey. Yes, I won't finish that joke. Okay. All right. Now, if that helped you, I'm so glad. If it didn't, please enjoy my mental breakdown. And let's get into this week's letter.
Let's do it. All right. This letter comes from Sad, whose pronouns are she, hers, who's writing from the South.
I love that that emotions have pronouns, you know, like, if this isn't a letter writer, sadness is for sure a she, her, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
I don't know what I mean by that, but
I don't know either, but I'm into it. All right. Sad writes, dear Sam and Sierra, I've been a listener since episode one and catch every episode twice a week. This podcast is such a consistent comfort in my life, and I'm so, so grateful. The week before Christmas, my fiance and I had to say goodbye to our beloved dog, Seuss. Seuss was a big, handsome pit bull and was around 11 years old. I had found him on the streets 4.5 years ago before my fiance and I got together. Seuss was my whole world. I loved him so much in a way that's impossible to explain. And he truly was the silliest, most lovable guy. He has left a hole in our family. My partner loved him just as much, and his dog, Haley, another senior pity, the two of them were like an old bonded couple, has been very depressed ever since. My partner and I are grieving together, which is a situation I've never been in before, and I'm finding it difficult. Our grieving styles aren't matching up sometimes. For instance, he has developed a need to spend more time at home with Haley, whereas being at home makes me horribly sad and I want to go out more. Some days, one of us is having a harder time than the other, or one of us is trying to lighten the mood when the other just wants to sulk. What's even more difficult is that even though we're both grieving and Haley and Seuss were both our dogs, Seuss was my dog first, and I desperately need taking care of. Only my partner is also a grieving mess, so it feels like there's no one there to support me. A small part of me feels resentful sometimes because I feel like my grief should be prioritized, especially when he needs caretaking from me, and I feel like I can't do it. Neither of us have much emotional capacity to caretake for the other. Together, we're very lonely and just sad, grieving messes with not a lot of support. Our house is so gloomy these days. My question is, how does a couple grieve together? What do we do to cheer ourselves up? We've created this bubble of sadness, and if we don't try, it just consumes us and we don't leave the house. I'm worried about us. Both our families are out of state and we don't have a ton of friends that have been present lately. So we don't have a great support system. We are so, so sad. Thank you for reading. We are usually so strong together, but this feels like uncharted territory.
Spring has sprung and summer is just around the corner. Packing your bag with sunscreen, your emotional support water bottle, and that steamy beach read. But wait, this year there's a new kind of essential that's right at your fingertips. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, spicy audio stories. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. Discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups.
And get this, there's a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, Greek gods and goddesses, Regency era, historical fiction, my absolute favorite, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you will always find something new to explore. Dipsy offers a modern approach to romance through high quality and captivating audio fiction.
For listeners of this show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/justbreakup. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/justbreakup. dipsystories.com/justbreakup. Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, Dad. Thank you so much for writing, for supporting us on Patreon and trusting us with this letter. You know, there's nothing like the loss of a beloved pet. I think because they're animals, we culturally like, oh, they're our family. We love them. They're our fur babies. And then when we grieve them, we're like, oh, well, they're just animals. I shouldn't be hurt this much, or my grief can't take up this much space or be this loud and messy. But I'm here to tell you it absolutely can be. I mean, grief, who are we to police our own grief to make it fit some sort of universal box for every being? Losing a pet irrevocably changed me. And I just want to say that your grief is real and valid. And I am so sorry for the loss of your beloved family member.
And grief is such a hard emotion to navigate in all pairs. Iterations of it. Yeah. And also in pairs. Yeah. You know, I think my experience is that everyone's experience of grief is really different. And some things may feel familiar to some people and some things may not. And we can't have expectations that we are going to know how to do it or that we're going to navigate it super well. And it becomes much more complicated when there's multiple people in the mix, right? When it's not just, you know, I've said this before, like it was so much easier to understand what I was supposed to do when I lost my dad than it was to understand what I was supposed to do when Peter lost his mom. Because like being at the center of the grief was like, cool. This like, great. I mean, it was not cool, but I was like, yeah, absolutely. It's all
you
about
know
me.
Where you are.
I'm at the center of this, like all of it. And when Peter lost his mom, I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm on the periphery. I don't know how close I'm supposed to be to the center. I'm not sure how far I'm supposed to be from the center, what I'm supposed to be doing about it. And I losing, the pet, both of your pet at the same time, I can imagine must be so challenging to navigate what it feels like to want to be at the center and recognizing that there's like somebody elbowing into that center as well, mm-hmm. right? To say like, I also need help here. And you're like, no, I need help. And it's like, well, who's supposed to help who? Because like, we're both messes at this moment.
Yes.
But again, it's like, I think that the like Instagramification of mental health has created this understanding that grief is supposed to somehow be profound or somehow supposed to be pithy, right? Like we're supposed to be in it and be like, oh yes, it has changed me and I've learned so many things and I'm on this like journey towards healing or whatever. But my experience of grief is that it's like not profound. It's just painful and weird and uncomfortable.
It just sucks.
It just sucks. And the idea that we're somehow supposed to like navigate through it well is like such a lie, because it's like, how the fuck are you supposed to navigate through something you've never been through before? And also the worst thing that's ever happened to you. So I just want to like create space for the idea that like, I don't know that there's a good way for you two to be grieving together, because I don't know that there's a good way to grieve, because it is so painful and challenging and hard and you're always so unpracticed in it. So I want to just like say that like, however you two are navigating this together is probably going to be a helpful way of navigating. And there's probably room for you all to set some intentions about what is like okay and not okay for you as you navigate this grief together.
Yeah, the thing about grief that comes to mind while I listen to your letter is that like grief in itself demands presentness. It's like, pay attention to me now, pay attention to me now. This is all-encompassing, and it's taking over everything. It's making me agitated. It's making me sad. It's making me needy. It's making me isolated. You know, all of these. It demands presentness. Pay attention to me now. Even though the thing grief really needs is time.
Yep.
You know, so it's like this duality between, like, this is the most important, most paralyzing thing in the moment, and the thing that soothes it is going through it. It's time. It's perspective. It's practice without that thing that you lost, you know? And I wanted to say that because I hear some things in your letter that I know as an outsider in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, they're not going to feel so close to your face. They're not going to feel so heavy on your heart. And I don't mean that in a trivializing, like it gets better kind of way. But I know from my lived experience that grief is making these temporary temporary incompatibilities between you two feel really hard and really big and really present in this moment. Pay attention to me. Pay attention to these incompatibilities.
Yep.
And are they hard? Absolutely. Are they challenging? Incredibly so. Are they going to feel like this forever? Absolutely not. This hardship is temporary. And I don't say that to wrap it all up nicely into a Hallmark card, but what you're going through now is just the beginning of this grief tapestry that you're unfolding, right?
Yep.
And you're going to unfold it, and you're going to feel different textures and different parameters and different challenges, and you're going to keep unfolding it. And all of a sudden you're going to look up and think, oh my God, I can't believe I started unfolding it however many yards that way. However many months ago did we lose this treasured family member? For example, you feeling like it's difficult to navigate who is taking care of who, or your needs right now. I'm not saying those incompatibilities aren't important and aren't worth tending to, but I'm also thinking that they feel particularly big and hard right now because it's what is being brought to your face. It's what is being put, shoved in your face by grief. Grief is saying, this is impossible. Mm-hmm. But I know it's possible. I know it's possible for you guys to navigate some of these rougher waters, you know, just sticking it out together.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I agree. Because I think it's your grief telling you, if your partner was better able to take care of you, this wouldn't hurt as much.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to tell you that's not true, right? Like your partner could be the best taker carer of, and like you are, and like you would still feel this immense grief because the thing that's making you feel the grief is not this like incompatibility with your partner. The thing that's making you feel the grief is the fact that Seuss is gone. Right? That's the thing that's making you feel this upset and this agitated and this discombobulated and this dysregulated because this wonderful creature who you loved so dearly is gone forever. And unfortunately, the work isn't trying to make yourself feel better, right? The work is actually to recognize that the thing to do is to start figuring out how you're going to let go and move on and accept the reality that this beloved thing or this beloved creature, this member of your family is no longer with you, is no longer part of your family. So I want to just sort of hold the idea that, of course, in this relationship, you can ask for what you need if you need something different from your partner. And of course, you all can figure out like what grieving looks like for you and if there are things you want to change about it. And I want you to not use the measure of, I feel good about what's happening as the thing that you're striving for, because you're never going to feel good about it. This relationship is not going to feel good for a while. And not because there's anything wrong with it, but because nothing's going to feel good for a while because of the fact that you just lost a dear member of your family. So I guess my advice to you is like, of course, if you need more attention, like you can ask for it. And also your partner may not be able to give it to you, but that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with your relationship or that you're grieving in the wrong way. It just means that life sucks right now because of the situation that you're in.
Yeah. I think, you know, Sam and I have gone through different grief required experiences over the last couple of years in our partnerships. And so I'm sure you relate to this, Sam, probably. But I'm sure you relate to this. You know, something that I've learned in my marriage with, you know, our ectopic pregnancy loss and grieving some other, like my birth experience and stuff like that, like that you have to, it's not about, like you said, it's not about finding a way for this to feel better. It's actually about feeling okay with it not feeling right and not feeling the same as your partner. Like I feel like I've gotten so comfortable because it was my body with our ectopic, and because we all grieve differently, you know, Willow and I moved through the world differently after we had that pregnancy loss. And I think I was forced then to get really used to the fact that sometimes I would just have to say to her like, oh, I think I'm just feeling another round of sadness, or I'm feeling another round of envy, or I'm feeling another round of grief. And I got, unfortunately, used to being like, you're here and I'm here and that's okay. Or, I think this is showing up for me in this way still, or, you know, again, not trying to find, not making my relationship be the thing that rights me, like rights my ship, you know, but instead my relationship is the horizon, right? My relationship is the thing that's steady and allows me to say, well, I'm feeling really stormy today, or I'm feeling really dried up today, or I don't know how many water metaphors I have, but And this is all to say to Sad, I think you should practice saying where you're at, you know, oh, I'm, man, mm-hmm. I still miss Seuss today. Like, I'm feeling it so heavy today. Yep. Or I feel like we are missing each other this week, or we keep bumping heads this week because we're both dealing with our grief. Just saying it, right? Instead of trying to make it right, just make it known, you know, make it shared and said that, like, this grief is here. Name that grief, you know?
Absolutely. No, and you can also say in that too, what you need in that situation, right? And you can say, you know, I know that it, for you, like, staying in is the way that you want to handle this. And for me, I, like, need to get out of the house. I need to be doing something different. I need to be not constantly reminded of Seuss while we're home. Can we agree to go out tonight and then tomorrow we'll spend a night in, right? Being in grief, processing through grief as a couple also requires being able to communicate about, like, what you're going through, like being able to say some of these things out loud, which is so hard because half the time you don't even know what you're going through. Like, that yeah. is, that yeah. is really real. And also, like, asking for what you need, being able to say, like, I just need to be in bed for the next 3 hours, or I just need to get out of the house, or whatever it is. And then also finding ways to flex and shift towards each other. Because yes. sometimes it might be like, actually going out sounds like a terrible idea, but I understand that that's what you need. So, like, let's do it, or whatever it is, because none of this is going to be perfect, because you're two people who are grieving the same pet for sure, but grieving in completely different ways with completely yeah. different experiences of what it means to lose somebody who's deeply important to you.
Yeah. And one more thing I want to add, and this is, I think I can only say this because I'm an outsider, because I'm a stranger, you know, and that gives us the gift of perspective that we often don't have when, again, that pain, that grief is saying now, this is a problem now, pay attention to me now. I know that it's really confusing, that your partner is grieving this animal that you had longer, you know, like yeah. our grief and our pain want to, like, make sense of things. They want to put them in a hierarchy and be like, oh, my pain is bigger than your pain because mm-hmm. I knew Seuss longer and he was actually my pet, you know, first. But I want you to picture you and your partner and your family, you know, 6 months from now, you know, 9 months from now. I want you to picture yourself in the future where the hierarchy of this grief doesn't matter as much, isn't being brought to the surface so immediately. And instead, you two are looking back and saying, look at that heart. That was a really hard season of our life. That was a really hard loss to navigate that we're still navigating. I think picturing yourself in the future where you two survived this, where you two made it there, the size and shape of each other's grief, it matters less. What mattered is, like Sam said, were you able to ebb and flow for each other? Were you able to listen to each other's needs, communicate your own needs, and find middle grounds when necessary? I know you can get there. And I know it's going to be hard. A couple months ago, we said goodbye to my wife's dog, Nev, who she had for 16 years. And I found myself, oh my God, this is so funny. I found myself saying to her what I wanted somebody to say to me when I lost my dog several years ago. And so I'll end by saying that to you. It's okay if you're sad about this forever. It's okay if it is always hard to think about and you always miss them and it never feels peaceful. I think the thing about pets passing away is that we do all that we can to make it peaceful for them. You know, we hope that mm-hmm. it's peaceful for them yep. and that they're no longer in pain or they're not suffering or they're more comfortable this way. But that sort of peaceful passing is just for them. It's never peaceful for us. Not truly, not in our hearts. Yep. It can be peaceful on the outside, but it's always painful to say goodbye to someone you don't want to say goodbye to. Yep. So I just want to say, you have full permission from me to be sad forever. Mm-hmm. You have permission for me to grieve forever, to let this grief be big and loud and messy and imperfect. It's never going to show up perfectly. Your partner's grief is never going to show up perfectly. But I also want to say, it won't feel like this forever. You're going to wake up in 30 days and maybe you're going to cry because you're still going to miss that dog. But it's going to feel just a little different, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, we're sending you our love. I hope this rambling thing makes sense or gives you any solace.
Right.
I felt like we were all over the place, but I feel really passionately about what I was saying.
Yeah, no, me too. Absolutely.
All right, my darling, we love you. We're sorry for your loss.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for writing and for supporting us on Patreon.
We love you. All right, pals. Thank you so much for supporting us here. We love our patrons so much, and we're really grateful to be doing the dang thing with you all. Remember.
So true.
Thanks. Remember, I would place a wager that we all have some sort of hurt or grief that we carry around in us. And we're carrying it around because we want it to make sense one day. We want it to be resolved or to be just or to be rectified or to be affirmed in a way that makes it hurt less, you know? And I guess I just want to say sometimes it will always not make sense. You know, sometimes it will always be a wound because life demands that of us. Life will take from us even when we're not ready or even when we don't want it to. And sometimes healing can come from just recognizing that it's okay if it hurts a little forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if all else fails,
just break up.